excuse me, 137. I want to read the first few verses of 137 Psalm. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? This is one of the saddest and most poignant psalms because it was written at the very beginning of the Babylonian captivity, where Nebuchadnezzar and his armies besieged Jerusalem. They conquered it. They burned it. They destroyed the temple. They carried away all the things in the temple into Babylon. There are historical depictions of this in ancient monuments. And then they carried away captive many of the Jews. And Psalms 137 describes a very sad moment in that journey, where they were asked of the Babylonians, sing us one of the songs of Zion. And the question was, how can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? I would like to answer that question. Can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? I'm going to go ahead and answer it. Yes. Yes, we can. It's difficult, but yes, we can. As we live in a time of uncertainty and change, headlines that are frightening to us, we begin to wonder about our safety, our religious freedom. What if something like happened to the Jews happened to us? What if we were overthrown? What if things were changed that we could not do what we're doing right now, which is one of the greatest privileges anyone could ever have? What if things were so different that they weren't like they used to be? Can we sing the Lord's song in strange environments, strange conditions, even a strange land? Yes, I think so. Yesterday, I met with the brethren at Fredericksburg. There were five of us there. Maybe the last time I'm able to meet there with them, any last time that we'll have services in that building. And it was a sad, bittersweet occasion. There were five of us. We did our best to sing. I did my best to try to preach. And as the song service progressed, it seemed like there was a lot more people in the building than just us five. And I told the brethren, I think the Lord sent some angels down to sing with us today. And the Lord blessed us to have one more service together. We sang a song, Brother Ellis led a song that I've never really cared for that much. It's the song Precious Memories. And I certainly don't want to venture an opinion about that that may be contrary or may hurt anyone's feelings. But I've always felt that that was more nostalgia than religion. But I have to admit that as we sang that song, my mind went back all the years that I was blessed to be among them 22 years I tried to serve that church. And there are some very, very precious memories that were sent by the Lord. And I wondered, you know, and I think a lot of times when finality strikes, well, are the good times over? And can there be any more precious memories after this? Can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Yes. With that, I have been studying of late the book of Daniel. And I would like to turn, if the Lord would bless, to the first chapter of the book of Daniel. And I believe that in this very outset chapter, that the question is answered that was asked on that journey, can we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? I'm going to read in the first verse of the first chapter. In the year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, unto the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. Did you read that? Is that right? It says that the Lord gave the king of Judah into Nebuchadnezzar's hand, and the Lord allowed, the Lord, I don't want to use the word bless, I don't want to use the word caused, allowed, maybe even more than that, Nebuchadnezzar to take the sacred vessels from the temple and place them in the house of his superstitious pagan god. Things that had been sanctified for the use of true religion is now a trophy in the house, the church, the place of worship of a superstitious god, and God was the author of that. That's hard to accept, but yet that's what the scripture says. This all happened. This is all historical. Nebuchadnezzar did come. God sent Nebuchadnezzar. You can read about that in one of the prophets. He says, I'm going to send a ravenous bird from the east. That was Nebuchadnezzar. God had gotten fed up with the Jews and their ways, and in judgment sent Nebuchadnezzar and conquered them entirely, completely, wasted the nation, and carried away a majority of the people into Babylon and left just a few behind for maintenance. Broke the city apart, destroyed the walls, tore down the temple. Now they're hung their hearts in the willows. They're in a strange land. And our oppressors want us to sing one of the songs of Zion. We're too busy weeping to even consider that. Then we read, Nebuchadnezzar has a master plan. He has an idea that he's going to set in motion. He wants to assimilate the Jews into Babylonian culture. And the way he's going to do that is he is going to get the young men and bring them into his palace, indoctrinate them, feed them, train them, teach them in the Babylonian ways. And in that, he can bring the Jews under complete domination, in so much that they would forget their own heritage and the ways of the Lord. Now, the devil likes to do that. He likes to get the young people. We can get them young, then we've got them for life. Thus, the enticements out there are geared toward them. That's the devil's plan. The Lord doesn't need a plan. The Lord has a purpose. The Lord has a counsel. And that counsel stands. The Lord does not need anyone, young, old, or middle-aged. He does not need the popular segment of the population. He doesn't need to institute pop culture to hook people into his ways. God speaks, and it is done. And oftentimes, when we consider the scriptures, the Lord uses the poor and afflicted to execute his will. And the Lord uses a few people to change the world. In the book of Acts, Paul and Barnabas went into a city, and all they did was preach the gospel. That's all they did. And after a while, the chief people of the city came to the leader and said, "These have turned the world upside down." Two primitive Baptist preachers have turned the world upside down. Solomon talked about there are things that are little, but they are great. In the book of Micah had a prophecy about the little town of Bethlehem. And he said, "Though you be the littlest, out of you shall come the great King." The Lord doesn't need one person. The Lord doesn't need a majority. But we need the Lord. And so the book of Daniel is focused upon four young men in a strange land being indoctrinated into that strange land, and through their dependence on God and their obedience and their faith, they're going to change history. And in that, the song was sung in a strange land. I've seen examples of this in my life and in my study of primitive Baptist history. A few years ago, I was blessed to go to a church in Triune, Tennessee, Wilson Creek Primitive Baptist Church. I was very excited to go to this church because I had heard about it all my life. That was the church that had gone down to two aged sisters, and for 10 years they would go to that building, just those two. They would meet together on Sunday morning. They would sing and pray. And they would pray that God would send revival. God answered their prayer. One Sunday, a brother came in, a minister, and brought his family. And within 5 years, that church was overflowing. I was there. I talked to the people that were there, that knew those sisters. And so, my friends, I'm glad it's not up to us entirely. But we have a Lord that is a very present help in time of trouble. And so in verse 3, It says, "And the king spake unto Aspenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king." All right, so Nebuchadnezzar says, "I want you to get of the royal seed, of the nobility. I want them to be good-looking young men, no blemish. I want them to have type A personalities. I want them to have an ability to learn, to grasp concepts, and to be able to stand publicly and give out what they know and not be afraid. I want the best of the best of the best." You know, the Lord looked down and saw that there was none to help. The Lord knows there's no best of the best out there. They're all gone astray. But yet, in my great sovereign might, I will use them. They don't have to be the rich. Jesus said, "Not many noble, not many mighty are called." He desires those that are poor in spirit. Those are the people that the Lord uses to show, "I can do whatever I decide to do. I don't need a leg up. I don't need you to help me. I don't need you to have the best version of yourself. I already know what version you are. That's why I'm sending my son." But Nebuchadnezzar says, now you get the best looking, because we've got a propaganda program. We're going to show the Jews you're really in a better place. And see how these young men are doing. See how they're faring. See how healthy they look. See how happy they are. Look at all that they've learned. Why, it's better now. Can't you see? You just need to forget. Forget about the past. It doesn't matter anyway. What matters is right now. You know, it's you only live once, so you might as well enjoy what you have. Oh, but precious memories, though, how they linger. And they do. And how those things and those experiences we have had, how they are such a treasure to us today. At the age of 20, I went to a rest home in Corsicana, Texas, to visit my grandfather, who was suffering what we would later know as Alzheimer's. He did not know who I was. He did not remember my name. He did not know that he was in a rest home. He had forgotten a lot of the previous years. But I went, and he was sitting there in the room, and I sat down beside him. And I said, "How are you doing, Papa?" You know what he said? He says, "Oh, I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. We had a wonderful fifth Sunday meeting last weekend, and the association is about to begin." Now, he didn't go to a fifth Sunday meeting, and he wasn't going to go to the association. But you know what he was doing? He was reliving those golden moments that he got to spend in service. And he was feasting on that, even in that condition. The Lord says, remember the former days of old. Remember the Lord in thy youth and store up those memories. They're great treasures. They're going to try to change. They're going to try to say that it's passé, that it's not, society has changed. People don't need religion anymore. People don't need church. People don't need the Spirit. None of this matters. What matters is what you want. My friends, that's the worst possible way to live. And there's no satisfaction. There's no contentment in that. I saw my grandfather in a, what people might say, I feel sorry for him. He's an object of pity. Then why was he so happy? Because he was with the Lord. Now, Nebuchadnezzar is going to try this, but he didn't know what he was dealing with. So we read on in verse 7. Well, verse 6. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. Well, we're going to change their names. Verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now, God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink. For why should he see your face's worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Oh, wait a minute. All right. I studied this last week. I was reading this. We sit down to dinner, I think it was on Tuesday. I looked at Leslie, Jackson, and Maddox. And they all, this is the way our dinners usually go. They look at me to provide them lovely dinner entertainment. That's my job. Leslie's job, she cooks, I provide the entertainment. So I'll usually have some little quiz. Some little, who won the Super Bowl in 1963? They'll try to guess, and I'll say, but there wasn't a Super Bowl in 63. I'll ask them some question, you know, that will try to trap them. Here's the question I asked them. What's pulse? Huh? No, it's in the Bible. Well, you mean your pulse of your heart? No. It's something you eat. Well, let me get my Bible. Got my Bible. Read it. I read what Daniel just said. Daniel said, I don't want to eat the king's meat. I want you to give us pulse. Question is, what's pulse? P-U-L-S-E. All righty. Now, Brother David is not so smart that he knew the answer. He had to look it up. So I looked it up. I looked at 8 different Bible dictionaries for a definition of the word pulse. And I got 8 different definitions. So I went to my old standby, Brother Noah Webster. Asked Brother Noah, what is pulse? You know what Brother Noah Webster did? He gave all 8 definitions. Okay. All right. Well, which one's right? They're all sort of like. So I guess, all right, let me go to the Hebrew lexicon, which was a mistake. Absolutely a mistake. Because they said, well, now the word pulse could mean this. And then they gave 8 more different definitions. So let's look at a composite. Here's the common denominator of every definition of the English word pulse and all the dictionaries you can think of. Here it is. It's anything that produces a seed. All right? Whether an edible seed or comes from a seed or produces a seed. Specifically, lentils, beans, peas, garbanzo beans, string beans, green beans, you name it, lima beans, butter beans. Anything that produces a seed that is edible is considered pulse. Some gave, it's just any vegetable you can think of. I don't know. But the common denominator is this: beans and peas. So Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael had the opportunity to eat royal fare, food, steak, roast, whatever the king, the fancy food that you would pay big money at a restaurant, prepared by the king's own chef. All they wanted. And they rejected it for peas and beans. Are you serious? Really? Because I'm going to tell you, I'm not that good. Give me the steak any day. Not even a question here. I mean, I got a buffet of this. And wait, Brother Goody Two Shoes wants me to eat peas and beans? Now here's, this is vital. It's vital because it's the very beginning of the book of Daniel. It sets the stage and the tone of Daniel. And from this one decision that these 4 young men are going to agree to would stem practically every event that happens in the book of Daniel because of this decision. Now let's try to understand it a little bit better, if the Lord will give me grace to try to explain it. When you can't change the world, you change what you can. When you're faced with a thing that is too much for you, you do what you can. Even if it's small, you do that much. When the Apostle Paul was called on the road to Damascus, the Lord had a desire for what Paul was going to do in his ministry. A lot of it involved traveling, preaching to people who'd never heard the gospel, suffering, being deprived. But the Lord did not tell Paul all that in the beginning. All he told him to do, get up, go into Damascus, go to Straight Street and stay there. That's all you got to do. Many times we look at our life and we may be in a problem or in some situation that needs to change, but we can't do it. It's too much. We do what we can. They could not overthrow Nebuchadnezzar and his army, but they could eat what God told them to eat. That they could do. They can't take themselves out of the palace and go back home, but they can eat what God said. They can do that. And they did that. And because they did that, they were blessed. And they were favored. And after 10 days of eating pulse, it didn't even sound good. Sisters, what do we got for lunch? We got pulse, Brother Dave. We've got a treat for you. We all brought pulse. I'm going to that pizza joint down there in McMahon's where I'm going. Right? I mean, the barbecue place. Go on, I'll get me some of that pizza. Pulse. Now, some of y'all who I do not understand, some of you would say, it sounds great to me. And I'm saying, I'm glad that's working out for you. I still don't like hominy. And that's pulse. No. I've learned to like, I ate my first asparagus 2 years ago. I still don't like broccoli. Don't even try it. But Brother Dave, everybody wants me to like grits. No, not going to happen. I've had it disguised 1,800 different ways. No. But I hope that if I were one of these, that I would make this decision. Because that fits things in my life that I've had to deal with where I could not change everything that I wanted to change. So I did what I could. And if the Lord blessed, then perhaps later I could do more. They did this in an honorable way. They didn't have a sit-down pulse strike. They didn't picket the kitchen. They didn't go on an email rampage. They went to the chief and politely, respectfully said, would you please just give us this? And the man said, now look, if you come out and you don't look as good as the king wants you to look, I'm going to take the fall for this. And so Daniel says this in verse 13. He says, then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenances of the children that eat the portion of the king's meat, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. Now here it is, verse 15. And at the end of 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and their wine that they should drink and gave them pulse. And they ate that for 3 years. That's faith. That's a lot of faith. But it's not much. But it took that act. And because they made this decision, when they appear, let's just read it. Let's just read it, verse 17. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill and all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding and all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said that he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar, and the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel and Hananiah, Mishael and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year King Cyrus. So what happened? He talked to him. He asked them questions. And he found their understanding 10 times better than all the rest. Because they ate pulse. Because they were obedient. Because they did what they could. Now, too bad. I can see that clock back there. It's too bad. These are my readers. I did not need readers until this week. I just bought these. Getting old is a terrible thing. Well, it's not. I'm being facetious. But I used to look at Brother Huck, at Brother Sonny, put on those reader glasses on and say, he's going to wear reading the glasses. And now, somebody giving this, you're recording this, giving this tape. So I can see the words. I can't see the clock, but now I can. So I got 5 more minutes. Now, you read the book of Daniel, and it's an up and down cycle. It starts out, oh dear, they've been conquered. Oh, now they got the kids, but they prevailed. They ate pulse, and they're better. Now they are numbered among Nebuchadnezzar's wise men. Things look good, then things get bad. Nebuchadnezzar has a dream, and he, now wise men, I want you to give me interpretation of this dream, but there's one problem. I can't even remember the dream. And if you don't tell me, I'm going to have you all put to death. That includes Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God blesses them. Things are great. Daniel gets not only the interpretation, he gets the dream, he explains it. And because of Daniel's being blessed of God to know what that dream was, Nebuchadnezzar follows suit and he builds this golden image based upon the interpretation that God gave Daniel. And then Nebuchadnezzar says, everybody's going to bow to it. Because they don't bow to it, they get thrown into where? The fiery furnace. How could God do that? Because he's sovereign. But what does God do? He saves them out of the fiery furnace. Things go on, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And then finally, Nebuchadnezzar is gone. You've got a handwriting on the wall. Then they're gone. And then Daniel gets weird. And the rest of the book is weird. Because some of the strangest scriptures you'll ever read in the Bible is in the latter portion of Daniel. And it's all this bunch of dreams and visions that Daniel's blessed to see. And all that is set in motion because they made this decision. And in that decision, in their honoring the Lord in the way that they could, they sing the songs of Zion. In a strange land, and God's name is honored. Even Nebuchadnezzar, the last time we see him in Daniel, he's eating grass like a cow. His fingernails are grown out like eagle's claws. His hair is grown out like eagle feathers. and he stays like that for 7 years. And then he looks up into heaven. And he says, I blessed the Most High God, who doeth his will among the inhabitants of the earth and the armies of heaven, and none can stay his hand or say unto him, what doeth thou? That's the last words of Nebuchadnezzar. Not only is Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael singing the song of Zion in a strange land, the king himself is singing the songs of Zion. And he didn't even believe until then. May God bless us to trust this Lord that we believe in, who is a very present help in time of trouble. And nothing's too hard for him. This political situation, God's got it. Coronavirus, God's got it. Yahoo News wants you to be afraid. God wants you to have faith. And he wants you to be reassured. Don't get scared about all this. The Lord is in control. And even when it doesn't look like he is, he is. Now, who do you trust? Yahoo News or the God of heaven? I'll trust the God of heaven because he wants us to be reassured and to be safe and to be saved. And that sounds pretty good. May the Lord richly bless you all, is my attention. It is, and I even forgot, I have a nice new Apple Watch right here. And according to my nice new Apple Watch, it's 11:46. And according to talking about all this pulse has made me terribly hungry. Let's eat dinner. Let's go and have some pulse. What? I'll even eat that. God bless you. Now, if some of you, dear sisters and dear brethren, have brought some pulse to eat, and you're worried about what I'm thinking, I want you to watch me as I put that pulse on my plate and eat it with a smile, because I do enjoy some of it. May God bless you. Let's sing a song, and if you have a desire to come and take up the cross and follow the Lord, we certainly would encourage you to do that. Does anybody have a number that would be good to sing at this time? 55.